Today's program was brought to you by Eating Tools, unique handmade eating and cooking tools. For more information, visit eatingtools.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
Linda and I like to kick off the show with a question for each other. What's the best thing you ate in the past week?
Yeah, so I was out celebrating with my boyfriend, Ryan, and we went to one of my favorite restaurants in New York City, which is Zenkichi. It's a modern Japanese restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And it's the perfect setting for like occasion celebrating and dining. It's like way romantic because they have these kind of bamboo blinds for every table. But I love to go because they have a great omakase menu. And it changes seasonally, of course. And this time, my favorite thing that we had was this like very lightly fried oyster tempura. And it came with like a little drizzle of lemon juice and I think some like matcha salt to dip with.
Oh, very nice.
What about you, Iris? What have you been eating?
Nothing too fancy, but I did get a chance to go to one of my favorite neighborhood spots. It's so local that it's not even on Google Maps or our equivalent of Yelp or anything.
Oh, I love stuff like that.
It's just like a local skewer spot. I'll call it Japanese inspired because it's definitely not authentic, but it's just cheap, dirty, delicious. And they have this one skewer that's like cheesy tofu skewers, and I always get like, so good.
That's pretty special.
But yeah, so if you've ever listened to our pre-Heritage Radio Network episodes, you'll probably remember that we did one on curry, specifically South Asian curry, because that's where it all began. We always knew we were going to revisit the topic because despite the fact that we mainly associate it with Indian cuisine, curry did manage to make its way into the cuisines of so many different countries. So there was really no way to unpack the whole story of the dish in one episode. Today we revisit that topic. We'll be focusing on an Asian country outside of the Indian subcontinent that loves curry, and that is Japan.
Yeah, that's right. So curry is hands down one of the most popular dishes in Japan. There's even an emoji for it in the Unicode keyboard, though they definitely have their own take on the dish. Iris, can you tell us a bit about Japanese curry and how exactly did curry become a thing in Japan?
Sure. So it's believed that curry was introduced to Japan during the Meiji period by the British. This was an interesting time because Japan was moving out of a more closed-off feudal system into a more open, modernized society. And then at the same time, India was under British rule, and the British Navy was one of the first like Western contact Japan had. After hundreds of years of isolation. So it was originally considered Western cuisine in Japan rather than South Asian cuisine. Though the curry in Japan really resembled classic British curry during this time, it slowly took on more Japanese influence and really became its own dish over time. But probably the biggest factor that led to curry becoming a national favorite was the introduction of instant curry mixes. You could find powdered curry mixes as early as the 1920s in Japan, but then in 1954, the solid block style of curry mix was introduced, and it's still a staple today. And those instant Japanese curry mixes kept me very well fed during my college years.
Yeah, they sure do. I actually just made some this week, too. That is a really cool origin story. And particularly the point about it coming to Japan from the British rather from India. So to tell us more about Japanese curry, we have Tomoko Omori in the studio with us today. She's the president and CEO of GoGo Curry USA. And GoGo Curry is an international franchise serving Kanazawa curry, as GoGo Curry originated in Kanazawa City, which is from the Ishikawa Prefecture. Go is also Japanese for five. So the restaurant chain is named after former Kanazawa baseball player Hideki Matsui, as his jersey number was 55. And is also the reason why you'll find dishes on GoGo Curry's menu called Home Run, Grand Slam, and World Champion, which is quite fun. Their style of curry is a thick black sauce served over Koshihikari rice, a premium short grain rice, also with very thinly shredded cabbage and the crispy deep fried pork or chicken cutlet. So welcome to the show, Tomoko.
Hi, thank you for having
welcome
us here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So please, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in your role as CEO of GoGo Curry USA? And what are some of the things you do in that position?
I see, okay. This is my fourth career, actually. And before becoming a president of this company, I was helping them out for the advertisement and marketing. And by the selling the advertisement for the community magazine called Chopsticks New York, which introduced Japanese food and culture. And I created that. That name came from chopsticks is also the meaning of a bridge. And a chopstick is the tool to eat.
Yep.
And also bridge between American cuisine, American and Japanese cuisine. So Chopsticks New York started in New York. We wanted to go nationwide in the beginning, so that's why we put NY after. Before that, I was broadcasting sports and Major League Baseball, actually. And I was following Matsui, Hideki Matsui, Ichiro, Shinjo in Mets, and Matsui, Kazuo Matsui in Mets as well. I met my husband, and he wanted me to stay in home, so I became a housewife for 3 months or so. But he actually ended up like, I need my space, and you should go out to work. So I ended up getting the job to sell the advertisement. Before, I was broadcasting sports live. This is the reason I came to America, to become an actress. So I was performing in the off-Broadway show. My apartment got burned by the fire, and I lost everything.
Whoa, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but I learned how to thank everybody instead of proving myself, you know. So that was a great breakthrough for me. So before that, I was born and raised in Japan. So that's how I became an adult. How I became a president of this company is that, as I mentioned, the magazine decided not to go to nationwide. I still wanted to do something nationwide, and the founder of the GoGo Curry, his ambition was to follow where Matsui went, and I wanted to go to nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was thinking about going back home to do housing or raise my kid, that was a great timing. He recruited me to be in charge for this brand. And after we launched that magazine, actually recession hit. And this fast casual food really was doing great compared to all the restaurants was closing down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I
and
thought
this was like 2008, 2009
right. time frame. Mm-hmm. So I thought, wow, this business is great. That's how I really started to look in that brand as a business.
Yeah, it can like sustain itself even mm-hmm. through such hard times. And mm-hmm. also the fact that it like melded your passion for sports somehow into yeah. it.
Uh-huh.
What a cool way to get into it.
Think so. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and so tell us also about your relationship with Japanese curry growing up. Like, were you a fan? Did you eat it often?
Mm. Well, as a Japanese, we at least ate like a week, once or twice a week, either at home or at school.
Wow, it's that big.
Yeah. And then it's really versatile for the, you know, housewife. You can open that refrigerator, anything in there, you can put it in,
make
in
the pot. The leftovers, delicious.
Yeah, yes. Because Japanese curry is all about broth. Mm. So the more complicated, it's good. You know, you can use the tomatoes, the cheese, and, you know, anything, like meats, of course, and the vegetables. The more you stew, the broth you can get.
And the flavors.
Right. So,
got it.
You know, and I cooked a lot. And even though I came here because we can put anything in there. And then with that, Iris mentioned that thank you to the curry mixture.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes going to be great.
Guaranteed.
Exactly. You know, but I like experiments everything. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes put the coffee or ice cream, cheese and honey or chili pepper, more chili peppers or, you know, you can... red wine.
Oh,
you know, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of depends on your mood.
Right.
And you know the basic construction of the flavors required. So mm-hmm. you can substitute things.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it is really versatile.
Yep.
That
yep.
is cool.
Because, yep.
so I was going to ask you, like, what is a big difference? You know, when curry came to Japan, how mm-hmm. was it adapted for the Japanese palate? And you just say broth. It's like...
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference, you know, soupy through stewy kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I heard that they started using the flour was because to match it with the rice better. And it came from England. That's why they have some stew... put some
flour
in it.
Yeah.
In it.
Okay,
so
for the texture.
Right. So that's the adaption we got, you
mm-hmm.
know. What else? What was the question?
Yeah.
And,
like adapting it for mm-hmm. Japanese tastes.
Right. And
so I think, another mm-hmm. thing is, like, the umami aspect.
Right. And also, like, during the war, they wanted to find something nutritious but easy to make and has some volume to it and a match with the rice. Because rice is everything mm-hmm. for Japanese. Like, as your previous episode, you had breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have rice. That's true.
Yep.
You know? Like, three meals. We have to have mm-hmm. rice. So, sometimes lunchtime, like, you know, we want to put everything together mm-hmm. and eat. So, like, you know, katsu curry, people had a rice and a curry and a katsu separated. But the people who don't have a time, they just put them together. And then, can you make it this as a menu? And that's how it happened, really.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, all your favorite things. And
mm-hmm.
Also, you mentioned, so you, like, grow up eating it at home but also at school, so it really becomes like a nostalgic comfort food thing
mm-hmm.
for
yes.
Japanese people too.
Yes.
Right.
Everybody, like, it's Japanese, talk about curry, started to craving for it.
Yeah,
you know?
That just happened to me this week.
That's great though, like, because I think the reason it happened to Japanese was we have curry with the memory all the time. As we grew up, when we camp, in the outside, we cook curry. First thing as a child, cook outside or without parents is curry. because it's so easy.
It's really momentous.
Real. So, okay. And or when we do some sports after the game, we go to eat somebody's house. Their mom's always cooking curry because, you know, we can make so much at once, you know, and then can serve so many hungry kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So we always have a great memory to it. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why when we started to talking about curry, always like the memory come back to us and, we have to have a curry today, you know, so that's how Japanese are.
That's so great. We're going to take a really quick break and we'll be back with more Feast Meets West.
Inspired by the finely crafted tools built at the hands of friends in and around custom knife making, and with a love of all things food, Abe Shaw began forging a collection of culinary tools unlike any other. Collecting and working with custom and handmade knives for over a decade, Abe has developed a deep respect and admiration for the artists, metalsmiths, woodworkers, and craftspeople behind the endless interpretations of these ancient tools that feed us, the most intimate tools in our lives. They needed a showcase, and Eating Tools was born. The curated collection of unique and extraordinary handmade culinary utensils you'll find here, along with a hand-picked selection of top-quality production-made pieces, represents a catalog of products never before assembled in one place. Many of these products can only be found at Eating Tools. Food, cooking, craftsmanship, and art are their ingredients. There's no substitute for having the right tool for the job, and Eating Tools promises to bring you just that. They think you'll agree that the food-loving visionaries behind each of their products has an eye for the tools we use every day. For more information, visit eatingtools.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So Tomoko, mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Gogo curry origin story. We touched on that like a little bit in my intro, but what else is there to know about Gogo curry and what makes it special?
Well, as you mentioned, it came from Kanazawa area. We have 7 different companies save the same kind of curry, which is like a Koshihikari we make. It's a That's from a local brand, and it very matches with the curry. And I'm going to skip what you made, mm-hmm. what you explained. And but here, we are, like, we make it that curry in the very big kettle. And yeah. 5 hours to stew.
Oh, wow.
If it's at home, you know, because we use the big one. Yeah. You know, at the store, it's only at 55 minutes. But then we'll mature 55 hours, you know, about 2 days and a little bit. And then we do have that 55 process.
Everything is 55.
I know. It's, yeah.
So I guess it makes it easy to remember for you guys. It's like, guess how many minutes.
okay. Yep, exactly. Yep. So, and then... what else is we have all about 5, so every 5, 15, 25 we give that customers free topping coupon.
I feel like this is where your marketing genius comes in. You're like, what else?
And we'll do it over at worldwide. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people from Japan visited New York, mm-hmm. wanted to use it, or people from New York,
nice.
Yeah, goes to Japan and use it, and then we can do that too.
Yeah. Do you adapt the taste at all, or is the exact same recipe?
Exact same, and we are very, very critical on that. Mm. You know, we won't change a thing. Even like, even sugar changes. So we export the sugar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, particular sugar we use and everything. It's like totally exactly the same. And then, so people like to compare like the taste differences from Tokyo to Japan, Tokyo to other cities in Japan, or, you know, Japan, New York, or Brazil, mm-hmm. or even Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know? So, yeah. But we're very, very critical about keeping the same quality.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned earlier that having, you know, some time for the sauce to mature. So what's that about? Is it like...
Yeah, it's a curry general, Japanese curry mm-hmm. general. Like some people like a cold pizza, next day pizza, right?
Yeah.
Same thing, same mm. concept. Like, you know, some people love the day after curry.
Mm.
You know, even like some restaurant has a menu for it, like the day after curry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much better. So that's why we want to serve the better way.
Yeah.
So we'll mature
so
it.
So the... flavors will all naturally meld mm-hmm. with each other.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yep.
And so what is your favorite go-go curry meal combo?
Mm.
I guess maybe that changes, but
yeah,
right now...
Yeah, but the signature is always katsu.
Mm.
You know, we are to very specific, put that center cut, and... we slice it out, we tenderize it in salt and pepper, and prepare every day. And we do panko, we put that cram bread in the morning, mm-hmm. and we deep fried at the order. So everything is very, very fresh. Mm-hmm. And it's really tender and crispy outside. And katsu is the best, I would say.
So how much curry are you eating these days?
Well, a lot, and especially I'm preparing for the New York Marathon, so I need some carb.
Such a good food for that, yeah.
Yeah, I need some carb for that, so and that stamina. So this is a perfect timing for me to eat more.
Yeah.
Good excuse.
So perfect. So tell us, what's next for Go-Go Curry?
Yeah, we would love to introduce this as wide as, like, so we want to take it as a nationwide, so mm-hmm. to introduce.
Because right now it's, like, in New York State and then, like, Massachusetts.
Yep, that's okay. It. That's it. So we would like to expand it nationwide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you believe that, well, I feel like with cities that have, like, a general, like, Japanese population or Japanese restaurants, you know, it is already quite a popular dish. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's opportunities for it to become even more popular? Like, has it reached peak popularity yet in the U.S.?
Not at all, because ramen is getting the peak.
Right.
Actually, when I was working for the Chopsticks in New York, I'm the one who created the ramen, I featured ramen. At the time, was only 5 locations of curry place, and Ippudo was the newest one.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like a breakthrough, right? And the next month was curry. And then we only had 3 stores, specialty store. It's still the specialty store, 3 of them, but we have 6. So, you know, it's just... but then, compared to that time, the names and brand... The founder is always wearing the uniform. So 10 years ago, first store of his came, and then he goes in the uniform everywhere. All the
great marketing.
I know, but all the restaurant could not let him in.
Oh my
now,
God.
But now people think that's like a, you know, a uniform. So, like aloha t-shirts in Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
People, it's like a style,
right?
Aesthetic.
Right. So the people who works in the restaurant knows about Go-Go Curry, so let him in. Especially that information is there everywhere nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, so they would look into who reserved. And of course, it says gogocurry.com and, you know, my email, so they will look into it and they see the founder. And even for that very nice high-end restaurant can let him in. So it's
times have changed.
Yes. Yeah. And tastes good. You know, tastes good. We have a speed and quality of the food. People, I always enjoy people coming back.
Mm.
You know, I can recognize a lot of regulars in the neighborhood. So when we have new store and some staff member transfers to the new store, they recognize, oh, that guy came from the Times Square location or Washington Square location.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely The product is promising, and I think people would love it. You know, it's so versatile, and I hope college students are gonna help, and you know, has that everything in that.
It checks all the boxes. Tastes good, hearty, budget appropriate.
Right.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, you kind of. Yeah, answered the question in terms of, like, you know, we were wondering why Gogo Curry is, you know, so successful. It is from Kanazawa City, but became an international franchise. And, you know, the things you said about, like, quality, taste, consistency there. It has a fan following.
Yes. And all about our staff members, too, you know. Even though it's a fast, casual food, my job is to create the workplace where my staff member can proud of be at.
Yeah, how many employees do you have then?
We have 48 kids plus their family.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's great. Like, I think the growth of our store is because of our staff members' growth. You know, because it's seven, so seven people grew or improved themselves out of 5 years, you know. Yeah,
that's cool. It's a good people story. So related to that, for our last question, what are some of your favorite Gogo Curry moments so far? So like, it could be like, you know, anecdotes from growing the business, or stories about your like employees or customers.
Wow. I have a lot of memories. I don't know. I cannot pick one, but
Is there something that like happened fairly recently that you were like quite proud to see?
My God, I'm proud of them every single day.
All the small moments. Someone memorizing the menu.
They all are. Even the, you know, they all. Yeah, I don't. It's their lives. It's our lives. And I cannot pick one, but I don't know. I think their life have changed. Looking back 5 years when I met them first time, was totally different people. And now we are moving into next chapter, you know, which is franchising, and then that's for them to go another step of their life. And
yeah, you're like building out the personal growth as you're building out the business. Something funny you told me before we started the show also was how like you would wear the Gogo Curry outfit also when you're racing.
Oh yeah. This coming November 5th will be my 5th New York Marathon.
Oh, congrats.
I started the New York Marathon. I started running because I felt as a president of that company, I need a spirit strength and that also mind and a physical strength, right?
A temple for the Curry.
Yeah. So that's how I started to thinking about how I can build myself, both physically and spiritually, so that it's competing against myself. So, you know, 26 miles, I wear the uniform, and then people say, go. So I feel like, you know, people are saying Gogo Curry all the time on the street.
Actually, they might be because they love eating there, too.
Right. And also, my staff member wears the uniform and cheers me and from the street. You know, there's like a 3-4 spots and cheer me up. So that keeps me going. It's the same thing with our Gogo Curry life, you know, because of them, I can keep going forward.
Yeah.
You know, so I would say this would be the moment, because when I, even though I'm really, really tired and wanted to walk, and I see my the staff member kids and like waving and say, Tomoko, and it's like, okay, I'm fine. And, yeah, but one time they said, you know, everybody looks so like tired and you're bad, but Tomoko, why are you smiling all the time while you're running? I said, well, because you guys are there, you know, I'm thanking the fact you guys are there to cheer me up, you know. So it is like a family. One thing, when we have an end of the year event, and I ask them, like, what's a characteristic of your store? Like, one word.
Oh.
Everybody would say family. So that's great. That's great family business, I would say. You know, even though we'll go for the franchising, I feel I would love to have a partner or the franchise owner to feel the same. So we expand the business with the curry, and that we would like to introduce Japanese comfort food nationwide, but also we would like to have more workplace where people can be happy at and be proud of to work. And you know, sometimes like a restaurant business are looked down, but then we would like to, you know, bottom up, and you know, because we're the one who's really making people smile. Like, you know, you guys talk about what you eat every week, you know, what's the best, and then it's so exciting. You know, it's so exciting to listen to what you ate and what you liked it. And so, well, for me, it's food is everything too, so.
Yeah, those are great values to retain and share. Thank you so much for coming on the show. For sharing your story. This was really great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For listeners who want to learn more about you and GoGo Curry, how should they stay connected?
Okay. We have a website, www.gogocurryamerica.com.
Awesome.
Awesome.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode. Just a quick reminder that if you haven't been enjoying Feast Meets West, Iris and I would really appreciate it if you could head over to the iTunes store or wherever you're listening to leave a rating and review for Feast Meets West by Heritage Radio Network so more people can find the show. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food.
For listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.